All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Mark Rice and Mr. Sharon Bowie. And Mr. Bowie, Mark was telling me during the break that you have a very compelling story. I didn't ask you whether or not you had ever been incarcerated and why you knew so much about incarceration. Are you willing to share a little bit about your story?
Absolutely, sir. You know, I believe that anything that's held in the dark, if you put it in the light, it could be of benefit. So if you'd like,
yes, sir.
I'll be more than happy to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I was incarcerated in the Wisconsin Department of Corrections for the crime of first-degree intentional homicide. I served 25 consecutive years in prison. Specifically, you know, it was one of those situations where I pleaded no contest to the crime because I was filled with naivete. That's the only offense that I've ever committed in my life, and of course, it's a big one. Some of the particulars are a friend of mine who, for whatever reason, we had a conflict, and throughout the course of that conflict, I killed my friend. I was guilty of that. I acknowledge that, and I felt that the honorable thing to do would be to accept the punishment for that. I did not know, though, that there were different degrees, that there were different circumstances. This was not explained to me at the time when I accepted that punishment. Nonetheless, I served the 25 years. Some of the things in particular that I think are important is that both the judge and the district attorney, as well as the other societal stakeholders, believe that I should be released from prison if, you know, I comported myself in a proper way after serving 13 years, 4 months. I served that time period, and then on November 1st, 2007, the district attorney, Judy Schwamley, she wrote the parole commission, informed them of what the judge dictated, what she had said, et cetera. Then she wrote them again in 2009 to inquire why I had not been released, and then, of course, she died. And from 2007 to 2020, I served that time in the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. During that time period, several things of significance happened. For instance, I earned a bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, assisted over 300 men in obtaining their high school diplomas. As the production clerk, earned $3 million+ while implementing some supply chain management techniques. I actually signed up 14 individuals to the University of Wisconsin-Platteville. I was apprentice veteran service representative, and I won 7 cases, specifically 7 service-connected disability cases for veterans who are incarcerated. I actually founded American Legion Post 1998, the first American Legion Post in prison.
So you're a veteran?
Yes, sir. I'm a 100% service-connected former United States Marine, and my service had a direct correlation to the events that gave rise to that conflict on August 2nd, 1992. So there's a lot of things to unpack and untangled with my story, and I don't necessarily mind unpacking them and untangling them, but I just give you an overview of why I sometimes sound the way I sound and think the way I think and feel the way that I feel. And to, again, marry on to or to jump on what Mark said, I, too, have been diagnosed with various Axis I disorders. Specifically, I have post-traumatic stress disorder with a panic anxiety disorder, major depression, recurrent type. And I believe those diagnoses, in that when you read the DSM-5, the characteristics that comprise those diagnoses, I have them. And as a result of me taking some time to get to know myself and actually working towards myself, I was able to address some of those issues, and I'm working to continue to address those issues even today. As things stand now, I have a master's degree like Mark, and I am pursuing a doctorate from Bradley University.
It is so wonderful a story. Because life doesn't end when you first go in, right? I mean, that for far too many people, they say, well, you know, I'm in, I'm tagged, I'm a felon. Because I'm a felon, my life is over. And the fact that you and Mark and many others have been able to overcome that. I'm not saying that people are individuals and people have different capacities and capabilities and we're all different. But there is, and it can happen because you guys are testaments that, you know, the life can be changed, right?
Absolutely, sir. And for me, however, you know, once again, you are very profoundly insightful because your statement of, you know, your life being over when I first went in, you know, I thought that I would work and work and work and work and then ultimately be released. And then ultimately after that day when those letters and then I was denied and denied and denied. And then most importantly, when those who I love began to die. When my father died, when my nephew died, when my friends died, right. When my only child died, you know, it's a devastating thing. It every day it strikes me, you know, the last time I saw my only child was, you know, laying in a coffin while I'm there surrounded by guards. And this was 11 years after I was supposed to have been released, when I had done everything that I was supposed to have done and more. And, you know, I thought I could work my way out of prison. I thought I could earn my way out of prison, and it didn't happen. And so, you know, you reach that point where you can either take the road less traveled, right, where you continue to work and strive to do good for your macro and micro environment, or you can just say, hey, I'm turning to the left, and I'm going to go ahead and engage in the behavior of those in my immediate surroundings. And that's a difficult choice to make. And it's, I think that I made the right choices. I dedicated my life, myself, the remainder of my life to making sure that my daughter has a father that she can be proud of. And that every day that I live, I will live it as happily as I can for every day that my daughter was unhappy. And that's the decision that I made, the choice that I made. And that's why I'm here speaking to you right now.
So let's talk about the debate that we've got, a gubernatorial, you know, election coming up very soon. And we do know that, and it's, you know, it's clear where Republicans have wanted to take the state and where they've taken it. When it comes to incarceration, it is a buzzword. It certainly incites people, and you can hear it when you hear conservative talk radio. It's always crime, and even areas where people don't see much crime, they're inundated with the candidates talking about, well, the crime is coming, as if the crime is coming to a place near you, you know. And there are people who are afraid in this country, and they don't know. They can't connect dots. They just hear the crime is coming. So let's talk about the debate that you guys are organizing and putting together, and what your thoughts are.
Sure, I can go over the United States Senate Candidate Forum again. Wisdom's going to be hosting.
Oh, it's the Senate.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
U.S. Senate Candidate Forum. That'll be Thursday, July 21st, starting at 8:15 p.m. And we have Mandela Barnes coming. Tom Nelson will be there.
Lieutenant Governor.
Yes, and Sarah Godlewski. They've all agreed to participate. Alex Lazary.
State Treasurer.
And Ron Johnson have been invited, but have not committed to participating at this point. And so we're going to be lifting up federal issues like restoring the right to vote and Justice Reinvestment Act. We want to, but it's tied to state level. So federal and state are definitely tied. We know going back to the 94 crime bill had a huge impact on Wisconsin. It's tied to what candidates for governor are doing as well here. Republican candidates want to build a new prison in Green Bay as part of their platform. They want to close the current Green Bay Correctional Institution, do economic development projects on that land, and then build a bigger prison that'll have increase their capacity to incarcerate people in Green Bay. And we need to push back on that. And they're using scare tactics. We've seen around the old law parole issue that they're using these tactics that people who could be released on parole are just waiting to get out to commit violent acts and terrorize the community. We know that's not true. We have stories like my story, Sharon's story, but many others. There's not been one single high-profile case of anybody being released on parole in Wisconsin and committing some sort of heinous crime. And we know that the evidence suggests that people who have done more than 20 years in prison are rarely, they rarely return to prison for a new serious crime. And people tend to age out of crime. The Sentencing Project, for example, has been advocating for caps on sentences at 20 years. And in European nations, they've started to do that, and they're producing better outcomes than the United States. And we got to look up front again with the Justice Reinvestment Act. We need to, instead of building more prisons, we need to start to decarcerate. Wisconsin can reduce the prison population by expanding treatment alternatives to incarceration, by giving people a fair chance to be released on parole, by ending crimeless revocations. The governor can commute sentences in cases. There's so many people that have been sentenced unfairly in this state. We have to look at the huge racial injustice, the impact, the disproportionate impact on Black and Brown and Native communities in this state. And so there's so many opportunities where we could actually be decarcerated and closing prisons and instead putting that money back into the communities that have been most devastated by incarceration. And that's going to change everything. But we need that vision. We need to get the U.S. Senate candidates on board. We need to get legislation at the federal level. We need the governor to start pushing more boldly in this state, and we need the legislature to come around here, which is going to be long term. We know where the legislature is at, but we're going to continue to fight and push back on the narrative that's being pushed out there by some candidates who are distorting the truth.
You know, the value of having all this white hair that I have is I remember Boxerville, whatever it is, when they built that prison.
Boscobel.
Yeah, when they built that prison and all the money that went into that prison, and even to this day, there's only a handful of people there. And the fact that we are even talking about building another prison, for some of us understand that when they build those prisons and where they build them, communities spring up around them. And listen, we got to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. My guests are Mark Rice and Mr. Sharon Buina. We've got some very compelling information to bring to you. 844-967-2789. We'll be back.